This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 93, sponsored by Jim Hanley's Universe, YouBuyNow.com, and the Netflix. Welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 93. San Diego's over.
Woo!
It's been over for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah, but not in my mind. I still wake up screaming. I am Josh. I'm here with Ron.
Hey.
And Connor.
Hello.
This, of course, is iFanboy.com, where we like to talk about comic books and read about them, not necessarily in that order. Every week, we all read our books, and one of us is tasked with picking the best thing out of their stack, and then we write a review on the website and then come here and talk about it on the podcast. Since we're talking about the books that came out, you should know that we may talk about plot points and spoilers. So if you haven't read your books yet, pause, come back later. You'll like it more then. We have a lot of stuff to talk about, and Ron had a big old stack, and you had the pick.
Yeah, I rolled the dice this week, and I lost. I think I got the most out of all three of us this week. I had like 16 books.
13.
Yep. On top of the Essential Dazzler Volume 1 that I bought.
Right, because that wouldn't have waited till next week. That was going to sell out right away.
That was brilliant, man.
Did you already read it?
I read some of it. Jeez. Chris Claremont, John Byrne, Sal Buscema, John Romita Sr., Black and White. It's brilliant. It's fantastic.
You didn't need to buy it right away.
Well, I wanted to. It was there. Anyway, so I had a big old stack, and it took a while to get through. And it was, and we've talked about before, you know, in previous weeks, how when there's a lot of books come out, you know, sometimes they're all not so great, or they're all really, really good, or, you know, like they're all every different kind of permutation has happened. This is one of the weeks where I sat there and I'm looking at like, I was looking at like five or six books I could have picked from. And ultimately, I ended up netting out on Powers number 25 as being the one that really kind of got me. But it was a matter of inches between about, you know, a couple of other books. And we'll get to that a little later on. But Powers number 25, there's kind of a stigma at iFanboy where we tried not to choose Powers because we feel as if we've chosen it so much in the past.
But everybody was like, you don't ever talk about that book.
Which is funny, yeah. It shows how our –
not since the show started. We used to before we had
exactly.
The podcast.
Yeah.
Pick it every fourth, you know.
I went back and looked, and the last time we chose it was in winter of 2006.
I believe it was the pick of the week on the very first show we ever did.
I believe you're correct, and yeah. I think that was the last time we picked it. No, so I felt it was due. It
that
also
was the last time it came out.
Well, I was just gonna say, it doesn't hurt that only four issues have come out since then. So
yeah.
And that's been one of the things that I mentioned in the review on iFanboy.com, if you go back and read it, is that the past year, Bendis is writing half of the Marvel Universe. Mike Oeming is doing a lot of work. He's doing Omega Flight. He's got his own book, The Mice Templar, going.
Mike Oeming is the Richard Taylor of comics.
Yeah, he did Cross Bronx a little while ago, so he's been very, very busy with stuff. And so it makes sense that, like, Lord knows, I know in my personal life, my personal projects take a backseat to the paying gigs and to the one where you've got somebody where you're actually held accountable. And it's so no surprise to me that powers have kind of slowed down in the past year. But luckily enough, it's no surprise to them either, and I think they're taking steps to rectify that. And I mentioned in the review as well, recently John over at wordballoon.com wrapped up the latest edition of the Bendis Marathon interviews, and it was, you know, great as usual. But in it, they talked a lot about the changes that were coming to Powers, and Bendis talked about how he really liked, you know, Fell and Casanova, and really liked the lower price point and the smaller issue, smaller page count, and wanted to do something different with Powers when they changed the format. And as opposed to going cheaper and shorter, they decided to go in the other direction, and they went more expensive and longer.
Mm-hmm. So, they went faster, more intense.
Yeah, exactly. Faster, more intense. So what we've got now is with issue number 25 is the first issue. It's now $3.95, but you get 40 pages of comics, of a comic book.
And no ad.
No ad. Well, ads for their own stuff. I mean, there's an ad for Mice Templar.
That's so unobtrusive, though.
Yeah, I know.
But it's the back cover. There's no interior ad.
Exactly, correct. And so you've got more pages of story. You've got enough cushion to do their reviews and their long letter column and everything, which I love, which takes, you know, just as many days to read, you know, as my whole stack takes. But so it's – I, for one, welcome this change. $3.95 I think is reasonable. It's a dollar more. There are a lot of books that Marvel and DC sell for $3.99 that are still 22 pages. Mm-hmm. So I don't think –
everything from Boom Studios is $4.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So I think that this is definitely worth it for the money. And then coming back on specifically on the issue, the last issue that we saw kind of ended the story arc. And there've been a lot of chatter online and stuff like that about, you know, are they just going through the motion of the Powers? Is it just kind of over and over again? I remember when we were in San Diego, we were talking to Jonathan London from Geekscape, and he was just saying, you know, it's the same issue over and over again. Like, I don't care about this anymore.
I
can see that.
So
I don't know if I agree with it, but I can see that point of view.
But what I wonder if it feels like that just because, like, these concepts that we're dealing with were introduced a long time ago, but not necessarily in book time.
True. Yeah. That's a good point too. But the thing is
also sorry to interrupt, but it's also happening in other books have taken this idea.
The concepts that are
being the concepts and powers are being used in other superhero books, so it feels familiar even though it's not powers familiar.
And that's something that I don't think there's any way that we can define exactly what it is. It's just that kind of weird feeling that could be influenced by the.
I don't feel like that. I mean,
I don't.
Neither do I. I think
when you said it, I think all three of us disagreed with that. Yeah.
The one criticism I had of the previous story arc was I felt as if there were two important things that have been introduced that really weren't explored that much. Were the fact that the powers, for those who don't read the book, it's a book about two homicide detectives who are partners in a world where superheroes exist, and they're homicide detectives in the Powers Division, so they investigate crimes that occur amongst superheroes or against superheroes or in and around the world of Powers. And Walker, the big guy, used to have superpowers, no longer has them, when the book started didn't have them, and his partner Dina Pilgrim, this funky little chick with short blonde hair. As the book has progressed and in the last issue, Pilgrim accidentally got powers from a powers virus, the powers that she doesn't want, that she can't control, and she's actually killed people. And Walker has become the Earth's protector from some cosmic force.
He's like
Green Lantern.
Exactly. So this book, that happened in the last arc. But there was another storyline going with that stuff kind of happening in the background, and I always felt as if those are two huge concepts that aren't being touched upon as much as I feel as if they should be. And it kind of makes sense now because issue number 25 picks up with a new story arc 8 months after the last issue.
I was going to say, and this is a point that I think is – I was thinking about this, and we always say read it from the beginning. I think you could buy this.
Yeah, you could pick up at this issue. Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely.
If you go away from anything from this podcast and you've been thinking about trying Powers and you don't want to go back and buy all the trades, go and buy this book.
Yeah, agreed.
I couldn't recommend a better book.
Yeah, I mean, number one, this is one of the best books out there, and it's been one of the best books for 7 or 8 years now. And while we thoroughly recommend you go buy all the trades and catch up and read it, if you haven't read Powers before, with issue 25, I think you could jump on and get a feel for it. There's a recap in the inside cover, and you could dive right in. But it looks as if the main thrust of this story arc, or at least a large portion of it, is the fact that now it's 8 months later, Pilgrim has been missing, Internal Affairs has started to investigate her, and she got freaked out, and she's disappeared. Walker, you can obviously tell, has been trying to find her, as well as deal with his new double duty of having being a cop and being Earth's protector. And what I found really interesting was that it didn't start off with an 8 months later. Mm-hmm. You know, it admittedly in the previously in powers in the blurb on the inside cover in very small text, it says that was months ago, dot, dot, dot. So you don't know how much time has passed. But instantly in the first page, I could tell time had passed because Walker's hair was subtly different. Mm-hmm. Not suddenly, subtly different. He looked thinner. He looked tired. You could tell that time had elapsed from the last issue. And as the story progressed and you saw that he was exhausted from, you know, doing his day job and then having to go protect the Earth from aliens, and you see a great fight scene with the aliens, it really kind of showed. And there's that subtle touch in the art to explain that time passed, I thought was just so elegant and so, you know, mature that it deserved to be highlighted. Additionally, they changed colorists with this issue. And not that the last colorist was bad, but I definitely noticed a difference in the colors of this issue. The colors left off the pages.
See, I really liked the last colorist, and I didn't like this one as much.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, the thing is, I never noticed the colors with the last colorist.
No, I did because there was so many. Yeah. There's so many things in the other book that I thought, like there's those interrogation room scenes with the drainer where it's kind of green and. Like I always thought, they had this really nice glow effect to stuff that I always loved the coloring in Powers.
Yeah.
And this is a little different, which I guess is not. It's funny because when you talk about the look of the book, there's an increased page count, but all the panels seem a lot bigger.
Yeah, I mean, it seems as if they kind of took away the restrictions, like where you kind of got the feeling that maybe the 22 pages were keeping them from telling the story on the scale that they wanted to, and now that restriction seems to be gone. Yeah. So, like right out of the get-go, there's a 6-page sequence where when Walker is questioning somebody who's involved in a Powers-related incident, and he asks her to tell him what happened, and over the next 6 pages, there's no dialogue. Just, you know, kind of panels describing what happened at this nightclub she was at. And it just, like, I feel as if with the old page count, we never would have gotten the sequence.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
It would have been a long bunch of dialogue boxes and balloons and things.
Yeah. Exactly. Or it wouldn't have been as paced, you know, like kind of bigly but also like, you know, at the right pace, you know, like, I don't know.
So. Did you notice that some of the panels, not even whole pages, but some of them look like they were scanned at like a lower resolution or something like that?
No, I didn't.
I noticed some edgy lines in different places. A lot, some of it's on the coloring, and then some of it, if you look in the very back of it when there's that scene of the dead superhero girls everywhere.
Yeah.
It's like one of the panels, it looks like they zoomed in digitally, and it's just not good. It's the second to last page on the left side.
Yeah, I see it.
Are all edgy. Which I caught that a couple times through here, and that kind of threw me. That's part of the color thing, I think.
Yeah, possibly. I don't know. I didn't notice that, and I'm looking at it now, and I kind of see it, but
the girl laying down the inner chest. I think reading this, first of all, we're all big Bendis fans. We all like, you know, Ultimate Spider-Man and Avengers and Mighty Avengers and everything else. But reading this, it was like, oh yes, you know, this is the stuff. I mean, this is one of those books we talk about all the time, where you can really tell when the creators pour everything they've got into it.
Yep.
Yep.
You can really feel the love for the book coming out of the pages that you can't always feel in other works.
Yeah.
And this was – after I was done with this, I was like, that was the stuff. I mean, that was like a cold drink of water on a hot day.
Yeah. Now, speaking of feeling the love, and not to get too immature on us or anything like that, but there was an odd theme in the two books that were the leading candidates for Pick of the Week, in that there was a lot of fucking in these books. And ultimately Powers won out because there's a sex scene between Walker and his girlfriend that was actually reminded me of Mad Men number 3 that we talked about a couple weeks ago in terms of a interesting use of the comic form.
Oming loves to draw the fucking.
Well, this is taking it beyond, like a step beyond. And well, now keep in mind that the first time Walker had sex with this girlfriend when there's the electricity when he gets off or whatever, you know, like the first I bought a page from that sequence. So like it's
I thought of that when I read the page.
Yeah, I know exactly. So I thought of that too. That was funny. But what Oming did with the 2-page spread with 60 panels of them doing it, and it was
I love that you counted, by the way.
It was not of course I counted.
I know.
It was not it was not perverse. It was not like uncalled for.
It was not exploitative at all.
It was not exploitive,
you
know,
really
like
explicit actually.
Right, but it was I mean I felt it. Not that I felt it, but I mean like it, you know, like
he means he was feeling it at the time.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, like you could. I mean, if I was right there with them, I felt as if I was in the room.
Oh,
it was. I just thought it was really well done, and
here's something else I think we don't get in a regular 22-page comic.
Exactly.
We should also mention not a kid's book.
Not a kid's book at all, nor is this podcast. But we should have mentioned something before that happened, shouldn't we? Yeah. Oh, well. So, yeah, so Powers was just back to its old game. I'm so excited. I hope they stay on schedule. I mean, I wish I could say that they will, but I don't know.
This is funny because this is like always going home. This is my first Bendis. My first Bendis I ever bought was Powers number one when it came out, and I've been following it all along. And it's funny that this is still going strong like this after he's changed so much. Not in a bad way, but like if you think about his position.
Yeah.
And normally guys don't stay with these books.
No, I know. I love that. I mean, even Astro City has sort of fallen by the wayside a little more than this.
Yeah, no, exactly, and that one breaks my heart. Oh, I love that book.
Did you notice the cover?
Which one did you get?
I have the Bendis cover.
Yeah, so do I.
Oh, I didn't know there was another one.
Yeah, the Omen cover. The Bendis cover, which took him maybe 20 minutes.
Well, there's some painting sort of stuff going on there.
Yeah.
Maybe it's part of a larger piece, and they zoomed in.
Maybe.
Well, you know what? This art's not a whole lot different than the art that I've grown used to from him.
Yeah, true.
I mean, there's a lot of silhouettes and stuff, too.
And Jinx and stuff like that. Yeah. So, but the other book that came very close to being the pick of the week that also had some fucking in it was Criminal number 8, which ironically is another, Powers is published by the Icon imprint, the creator owned imprint at Marvel. Criminal is also out of Icon,
which exists solely to please Bendis and Brubaker.
Yeah, and is also a labor of love of Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. And so I thought it was fitting that those two books were kind of duking it out. And I thought this issue was possibly the best issue of Criminal yet.
I think I might be right there with you.
Yeah.
I'm definitely enjoying this storyline more than the previous.
Way more. I think it's the lack of a soul patch.
Yeah.
I think that there's one thing that's beautiful in this is like it'd say something at the end of one page and you'd flip it and it finished and it was just like – it was a little cliched but a little clever and just it was just enough fun in that noir-y style. I loved this book.
I enjoy Phillips's art when it's on, but I've noticed throughout previous issues and stuff like that, every now and then there's been a moment where it's been off for me at least, but every page, every panel was spot on, was so well done.
This is like he had no Marvel Zombies to distract himself with.
Yes, exactly. So
I can't wait to see where this – I mean, I'm reading this book and the plot is that there's two brothers. One goes to war and the other one stays home as a criminal. He gets killed. The brother comes back from war and now he's trying to find out what happened to his younger brother and exact revenge. And I'm on pins and needles now because he's joined the gang. He's getting inside. They're planning the big heist or whatever they're planning. And I just – you know, you just keep waiting for him to either get his cover blown or to revenge his brother, and
this reminds me of Sleeper, which my favorite thing that Brubaker's ever done, and there by extension Sean Phillips, because basically the thing about Sleeper was he's a double agent, so he's always among all these people.
Every moment is tense,
and you're wondering when he's going to get like found out. Now in that the stakes, I guess, we're a little bit higher because the punishment would have been really horrible because he was working with like the most evil people. This is the same thing, but on a street level. So I guess maybe that's like it feels like that, which is apparently what he does really, really well.
Yeah. And personally, for me, like what almost put me over the top, like both Powers and Criminal had moments that made me fall in love with them. Mm-hmm. For Powers, it was this extended sequences and the sex scene. Mm-hmm. For Criminal, on the third page, it's when the main character, Tracy Lawless, is looking out the window watching the snow and the text and the prose about how he likes to make the city look, how it makes it look unspoiled, like a new found snowfall. And I was just like, oh, God, yes. I was just like, that is so good. Like three pages in and I'm already like savoring it. It was just – oh, it was great.
I actually liked the bit where he'd slept with the girl and he's laying there in bed and he's kind of looking at her and he's thinking to himself. Actually, it's not – it's third person narration, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is interesting, and he's like, had she made him happy, brought him some kind of peace? He hopes so, and he hoped he wouldn't have to kill her. And you turn the page, and then you turn the page, and it's like the rest of the crew though he could go either way on, and then it leads to these tense sequences and.
Yep.
Oh, this was the more we talk about this, the more I'm like, God, this really was great, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But this is the same thing as Powers. This is the book where you can tell that Brubaker is just loving every page of this book.
And what I think is amazing is the fact that it's being done by Marvel, and Marvel, who have faltered and fallen on the creator-owned imprint, you know, the Epic line, you know, the Epic line disaster that happened, you know, 20 years ago and then recently and all this kind of stuff. And what it seems they've done is they said, listen, we'll handle the production, we'll handle the printing. You just make your comic books and look at what can be done when you let the artist go to it, you know?
Yeah, but these are different than all those, and that Epic seems, or Icon seems to be like a, it's like a perk. For
yeah, it's only for two guys. Apex, it's not like
guys.
It's a line of comics. It's
yeah,
just
I mean, like, they'll let yeah, they'll let Straczynski do a book in here if he wants to, but, like, you couldn't pitch to Epic or Icon.
Yeah, no, I don't think – no, I definitely think you got to get in and prove yourself and stuff like that, but what it is it's just untouched. It's,
yeah.
It's almost like, you know, I mean, like, I imagine they – I mean, Bendis and Oming and Mac were doing that at Image with, you know, with Powers and with Kabuki, and I'm sure Brubaker could have done that, but it's great to see Marvel embrace that kind of approach, at least, you know, whether it's for their golden boys or not. I mean, I don't – you know, Mac kind of is a golden boy, but not as much as Bendis and, you know – but it's just kind of letting them do what they do and do it well, you know, and I think that's great to see, you know, because we get such great product out like this. So
yeah, these are two books that I don't – enough people are not reading. I don't think that either of them are in any danger of going away. But if you can track down – what are we on?
Eight.
So six, seven, eight. Criminal number six through eight, like there's just no better comics right now.
Yep. Or go by the first trade paperback, even though like we like the storyline better, the first trade paperback we still thought was great. So
yeah, it's still it's called Coward. It doesn't say Criminal anywhere on it.
Yeah, it says Criminal on it. It's just a criminal
right.
Story or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
But and also if you've ever been thinking about Powers, this is the week to go try it.
Yes. So yeah. So
let's,
that's it.
Let's get back to where the bread and butter is now.
What's the event of the summer, guys?
The Sinestro Corps War.
Oh yeah.
Is it?
I think it is. I think it's the most under the radar, quietly becoming the event that I care about this summer.
I don't know how under the radar it is. I think people just like it.
Well, no, but I think it's compared to World War Hulk and compared to Countdown and compared to all the other stuff that's going on, I feel as if this is benefiting from there being bigger people.
Yeah, there's definitely more hype to other –
Yes.
I mean,
yeah, I guess you're right. But yeah. Well, I guess I don't pay attention to that so much, and I'm like, this is the one that I'm enjoying.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
This is the one that's good.
So Green Lantern number 22, did you guys enjoy?
I did. I did very much, and I keep expecting not to. Well, just because, you know, it is an event, and I do have event burnout, I think. But it definitely kept sort of the pace going and in the tone achieved by the Sinestro Corps special.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like you turn the page and there's a bunch of aliens and Green Lanterns all fighting with each other. And I liked seeing the development of the all of the Green Lantern Corps hate Hal Jordan storyline. Because I'm getting sick to death of that, and
right.
At least they didn't like let him die. I guess, which you know, they fought with him. Like, we're not going to like you, but you're our man. So
right. Well, and it's not all of the core. I mean, these are that's the select group that were affected the most by when he was Parallax.
No, so. I know. I'm just getting tired of it because that's been going on since what are we on Green Lantern 22?
Yeah,
that's the first one now.
Yeah,
let's move along.
Connor, what did you think?
I liked it. I didn't love it as much as the previous chapters. I think by this point we should probably have a clear idea of what is going on besides just a lot of fighting.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm enjoying it. I just for the first time I thought, well, maybe a little bit more explanation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel as if we got development. I mean, there's a lot of fighting, and much in the same way that World War Hulk is like a big summer action movie, a lot of sci-fi kind of fighting in that regard.
Yeah, but
I thought
this is going.
I'm sorry?
But I don't know where this is going.
Right, yeah, exactly. And well, I don't know where Hulk is going either. But but what I thought was interesting was that we had really creepy developments on the Sinestro Corps side.
Yeah.
Like the one page with the boy who's no longer the villain formerly known as Superboy.
Right.
Like, which was, yeah, Prime, I guess is that it's being called?
Yeah, I don't even know.
and the Hank Henshaw Cyborg Superman pages. Mm-hmm.
That was real good. Yeah.
I thought that was great, and that moved that along to kind of explain what, you know, not explain, but hint at what their role is, because I was kind of curious what their role was.
I got totally creeped out by the Kyle Rayner mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one thing I don't like about Parallax is the fangs and the teeth.
Yeah.
And stuff.
It gave me the heebie jeebies.
Yeah.
Did you read the hole in the back of his throat?
Yeah. Ugh. That's just, ugh.
Did you read it late at night?
It was dark.
Yeah. Ugh.
It's like the Sarlacc pit or like the sphincter from hell.
Yeah.
It's not pretty.
Yeah.
You know what's funny?
No, I mean, this is a lot of fun. It's just, yeah.
I didn't buy the Green Lantern Corps that preceded this part of it.
You didn't need to.
I know. Yeah. I was like, oh, I'm going to have to catch up. And then I started, I was like, I don't feel like I missed anything.
I don't believe I'm going to be buying that one either, because I bought it too, and that was a waste of time.
Okay, good. I'm glad to know that.
Cool.
It was fun.
So, but then in terms of the other events books, Countdown number 38, what did you all think of this one? Josh, are you still with Countdown?
I'm curious to know why you wanted to talk about it.
Because I actually enjoyed this one probably the most out of any issues that have come out of the Countdown series for some reason. I don't know why.
Had a great cover.
It had a great cover. I think a part of it was that I really enjoyed the flow of the stories in a way that hasn't been done before in the series. Where similar to what you're saying was going on with Criminal, actually a similar kind of device where somebody starts a sentence and it trails off an ellipsis and you turn the page and it moves on and they picked up the answer. You know, I really like that because that really felt as if these – because the biggest problem I've had with 52 and more so a Countdown is that these stories have been kind of so disconnected. I don't understand how they all tie into each other. And even though they don't plot-wise, I felt as if that device made the story flow a lot better.
What did you like out of this one? I'm just leaving through it now. I'm sort of reminded. I thought the Tim scenes with Jimmy Olsen were fantastic.
I thought that was great. I thought the Oracle scenes, the Calculator. I love Calculator. I wish I love the idea of Oracle and Calculator as you know two sides of the coin in terms of computer geekery. You know, like behind the scenes, even though it's all totally impossible in fiction, but like whatever.
Let me ask you one other question. When the question decides to let the rogues go, what did you think?
I don't know. I was indifferent.
It was a little unbelievable. Also, her hat disappeared. But
yes, yeah. She needs to wear the hat all the time.
I didn't mind it without the hat, but I think there were good and bad parts of this one. I thought there was some fun scenes. The Robinson stuff was good. I liked the question stuff, even though letting them go didn't really make any sense. But,
I even liked the Mary Marvel stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, really the only one that didn't. I think the only one that was slow, if anything, in the Countdown across the board is the Holly Robinson one, which just didn't even have any. And then this didn't have a lot of Jason Todd, Donna Troy, which I think is slowing things down as well, you know, because I don't really get what's going on either. So, yeah, I don't know. I just really enjoyed it. I just felt as if this was a glimmer of what this book could be. So.
This one was drawn by Jesus Saiz, who did Checkmate for most of the run.
Yeah.
It looks real good, too.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, so. All right, cool. Well, speaking of Countdown, this episode is sponsored by Jim Hanley's Universe, which is one of America's best and most progressive comic book stores. They've got one of the best selections of comic book titles and comic merchandise you could ever find. They're located in New York City, and they're the place where art and literature meet. And we're pleased to announce on their end, and we're helping them out here, they've got a JHU Countdown sale. That's the JHU Countdown. It's a 9-day sale on all back issues that are under $20 in both of their stores in New York. And the way it's going to work is on August 13th, all back issues under $20 are 10% off. And then on the 14th, they're 20% off. And the 15th, they're 30% off. And that keeps going until the 21st, when on August 21st, you get 90% off all back issues under $20. So you can get there early and get a discount and get a good selection, or you can get there later and get an awesome discount, but the good stuff might be gone.
It's sort of like being at a comic convention.
Exactly. So so I'm excited for the Jim Hanley's Universe Countdown. I know I'm going to go to the store and try to load up on some back issues. So if you want to go, if you're in the New York City area, you can go to their Manhattan store, which is located across the street from the Empire State Building in Midtown on 33rd Street. Or they're also on Staten Island at 325 New Dorp Lane. And you could also go online and visit them at jhuniverse.com. And they're also on MySpace at myspace.com/Jim Hanley's Universe. And also you can call them. You can do mail order. If you're looking for a book, they'll find it and they'll order it for you. They're knowledgeable staff, great folks over there. So head over to Jim Hanley's Universe. Tell them my fanboy sent you. Friend them on MySpace and enjoy the comics. So
quickly, you wanted to talk about Nova number 5, or as I call it, we didn't realize that Green Lantern would be doing this too.
It's really good.
Is Nova dead?
No,
the only reason why I wanted to point this out is that Nova is not dead. Richard Rider is not dead.
But the end, he turns into Parallax.
No, really? He doesn't turn into Parallax.
Basically.
No, he doesn't. How does he turn to Parallax?
Well, it's not Parallax, but basically Richard Rider if you're not reading it, I get it's foot, whatever. At the last page you turn and the bad guys have infected Richard Rider, who is near dead, and he stands up.
Phalanx got him.
Yeah, so he's evil now. Much like Kyle Rayner.
Yeah.
Well, he appears to be. It's still the same deal. It's the exact same last page as the Sinestro Corps special.
Yeah, I mean, it is that and that the other side taking him over. But like, the thing is, you don't know if the Phalanx are evil or not. They're just being, you know, they're conquering, but their motives are sketchy, I think.
They're like the Borg.
Yeah, exactly.
But either way, on a grand scale, it was really similar.
Yeah, I mean,
the whole concept is really similar.
No, I know. I just thought it was funny that they happened, and I guarantee you it wasn't, like, they probably didn't know what was going to happen in Green Lantern. I'm sure it happened organically, but I can imagine when Sinestro Corps hit, like, the guys who were scripting this went, oh, come on!
Exactly.
So that's three books this week, Green Lantern, Nova, and Powers, all featuring some sort of galactic core of space cops.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
And just to break it down, Richard Rider is considered Nova Prime now. And the Kree woman who found his body, when she became Nova, she had the old Nova costume, and now she's Nova 0001. So she's the beginning of rebuilding the Nova Corps. So, as I predicted.
Which is also what happened in Green Lantern.
Yeah, exactly. But whatever, it's Nova, and I love it, so it doesn't matter. You guys buying DMZ in issues?
Trade lightly on this.
So you better shut your mouth.
I just want to say that the current storyline, Friendly Fire, ended this part 5 of 5, and it ended really strong, I thought.
I love to hear that it's still going to be good when we get there.
Yes, it will be. The five-issue storyline was a little rough at times. It wavered a little in my eyes, like around issue 3 or 4, but it ended really, really strong. That's all I want to say about DMZ. So,
trade number 3 comes out September.
Yep, so keep an eye on it.
DMZ. I just wanted to mention on Daredevil this week, we've been saying how it felt kind of slow, and I really loved this week the stakes were picking up all over the place. And it was just
right,
like,
here's my problem with Daredevil, right?
All right.
The first page, the title page, To the Devil His Due, part 5 of 5.
Yes.
And then the last page, To Be Continued.
Yep.
That's interesting.
The next issue is the 100th issue, so right. But you're
just,
right.
I just loved that it was like raise the stakes all over the place.
And I agree with you, but I felt as if the ending disappointed because I'm not as up on my Daredevil history as I am like my X-Men history. Mm-hmm. I didn't know who the villain at the end, what the reveal was, so it didn't mean anything to me.
No, I didn't either. I was actually more thinking about the fact that like they're going to have to deal with what happened with Mila more than anything. And
Mila,
who cares? She's dead anyway. She's not long for this world.
Yeah, well, yeah, not true. But no, I felt as if that reveal was supposed to be one of those like, oh crap, look who that is. And
it's
I was
funny,
like,
I was like, Doctor Doom looks weird.
Yeah. It looks like It looks like the guy from the Mask of the Phantasm. Remember that Batman?
Yeah.
But I mean, like, ultimately, we find out who the person coordinating this on Daredevil is, and who's trying to take over Hell's Kitchen again, and it's somebody, Larry Cranston. I'm just like, it's Larry Cranston. I was like, who the fuck is Larry Cranston?
Feels familiar to me, like I should remember it, but don't.
Yeah, I don't know. It didn't really have the and hopefully they'll explain that in issue number 100, which I assume is going to be double sized and awesome. Yeah. But still,
It doesn't even matter how bad this book is to me. I just like the way it does what it does.
Yeah,
it's funny that he's fighting supervillains though, because I'm kind of not used to that. I'm like, oh yeah, they're supervillains.
Oh, okay, here we go. I got it.
Fear is a law school classmate of Matt Murdock's.
I found the exact same thing. Yeah, he's the primary villain from Daredevil number 6 in 1965.
No shit.
No, Daredevil number 89, I'm sorry, in 72 is for Cranston. So it's Mr. Fear. That's who it is.
Brubaker, you don't think of him this way, but he has a real way of taking things back to their roots.
Yeah.
Did it with Captain America, did with this. Last thing I want to mention is...
I just love this entry in Wikipedia. Cranston has resurfaced, providing the criminals of Hell's Kitchen a drug that causes the user to become completely unafraid of death in an attempt to make Daredevil's life miserable. That's his motivation. I just want to make his life miserable.
They're all men without fear. The last thing I wanted to mention was after last month's pick of the week on Fable 63, which was that the Good Prince storyline, which is excellent, this issue was like a interlude in the middle of it. And at first I was like, oh, I don't want that. But it's all about the Cubs. And if you haven't read it, you won't know what that means. But if you do, you do. And I love
the baseball team?
Yeah, we'll go with that for now. No, the Cubs in the story... And sure. For some reason, they're...
Because they suck this year. No, they're doing better, aren't they, Connor?
You're just making it take longer. the Cubs are one of the things I really like about this story. It's incredibly cutesy, but they're fun, and this was a really fun issue. And it tied in with Jack of Fables really, really well in this way that like the books aren't connected, but they are. You don't need to read one for the other, but if you are reading both, this is like little bits of extra treat. It's just continuing to be really good, and I just love all the different styles that he writes the book in, and... still good. That's basically it. This might
one day I will buy the third Fables trade. I don't know when that day is, but it'll happen.
All right, cool.
Until then, though, I got movies to watch.
Nice shit.
And to do that, I go to Netflix, www.netflix.com/ifanboy, over 75,000 titles. They got free shipping both ways, fast delivery. You go on the website, you make a list. They send you the movies at the top of your list. You watch them, you send them back. They send you the next one. It's beautiful. Plan starting as low as $4.99 a month. And if you go to www.netflix.com/iFanboy, you get a 2-week free trial. That's netflix.com.
All right. So as we get back from San Diego and we try to sort out our lives, we realize that our inbox is overflowing. So we're going to get through a bunch of them this episode. Connor, do you want to do the honors on this first one?
Yes.
Okay.
Betsy L. from Sioux Falls, South Dakota says, "So this is the first time I'm contacting you guys, and first I'd like to say I love your show, both the video and the audio podcast. You three dudes and the interns have all really helped me refine my growing obsession with comics. But, and yes, there's a but, I have to admit you guys have led me astray. Strangers in Paradise was, in a word, girly. And yes, I'm a girl, so you can't be all, yo, you're a boy, don't like superheroes and whatnot. So there. I bought this comic, the first pocket trade paperback, to hopefully get my sister into comics, because she looks at me like a dweeb when I go on and on about why The Last Man and Irredeemable and Ant-Man. She said, bring me a girly relationship-y book, and perhaps we'll see. I said yes, and took Ron's advice and bought and read this book. Within the first several pages, I wanted to stab Francine in her stupid face for reminding me of an ex-friend of mine who acts exactly like her, removing all sharp objects from the room before telling Kachu that A, Francine will only ruin her life, even if she did not stop pining for asshat boys and date her, and B, this will never happen because no matter how much people tell her she's cute or smart or funny, she won't believe it and will be more concerned with social conventions and being miserable herself to do anything to make herself happy. And in conclusion, she will make your life a misery. And hey, I bet that's what happened throughout the entire series until it ended. Basically, I've been grinding my teeth about this because aside from one thing, I've agreed with you guys and everything. So, okay, here's my point. What the hell did you, even Connor, see in this comic, and I didn't?"
Wow.
I think you're bringing your own baggage to the story, quite honestly.
I'd like to point out that by implication, I am too manly for this comic.
You are too manly. In fact,
Betsy, I was not a big fan of Strangers in Paradise. I did not read past the second trade.
Well, here's the thing. Number one, the caveat is not everything's not for everybody. So that's the first one. The second statement is that did she finish the whole first pocket trade paperback? Because as I always say with Strangers, is the first trade paperback that came out, the first little black covered one, gets a little goofy, gets a little more humory, gets a little more not as realistic or serious. But the second trade, I Dream of You, is when it turns the drama up a notch and actually gives you a better representation of what the book is like.
And there is a different kind of story in there that becomes, yeah, there's an espionage story and a crime story and a.
Now, the
is
thing,
she correct that this is what happened? Does Francine spend her whole the whole book miserable until she realizes she loves Kachu?
Sort of. Yes and no. I mean, not in the way that she's describing, I don't think. No. I think one of the things that makes Strangers in Paradise so brilliant as what it was is that, yes, Francine reminds you of an ex-friend of yours. You know, like, it is a traits of humanity that are true that you can relate to, that you might not like, but you watch them grow as characters and as people over these years, and you see them get to the end point in a way that is touching and heartwarming, and that's why I liked it. You know,
I think the point of the book is sort of, one of the things is you grow up to accept the person that you are, and therefore you will find some sort of happiness in that.
Yep. So we hope your ex-friend has found happiness and she's not your ex-friend because she annoys you, but you're definitely bringing your own baggage to the table, and please leave it at the door.
Jesus. But Ron and I like it, but Connor doesn't like it.
So. Hey, yeah. It wasn't necessarily for me. I might give it a chance simply because Terry Moore's so awesome, but I didn't love it. I don't feel bad about it, no matter how many times Ron and Josh say I have no soul.
Yeah. Here's some advice. You want a girly book for your sister? Give her Fables.
It's not girly.
No, I mean, right?
It's not a girly book.
Well, we'll see.
I don't think so. I don't think it is at all.
Go give her Runaways or
get Andy Watson stuff.
Yeah, Andy Watson is a good thing. Well, it depends on what you mean by girly. But, get Andy Watson. Get Slow News Day or get
Breakfast
Love
Afternoon.
Fights or Breakfast. Yeah, yeah. So.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man. Yeah.
Mary Jane loves Spider-Man.
Yeah, Mary Jane loves Spider-Man, definitely. But, but Terry Moore is writing. Didn't he write an issue of that?
He's going to be writing.
Over.
Yeah, right. That's it. He's also taking
John McKeever wrote it.
Right, that's the one.
And someone else before him.
Our next email is from Sean from Charlotte, North Carolina. He said the other day he happened to be reading World War Hulk number 3 and he sneezed. As he sneezed, he felt like his damned eyeball was going to fall out. And he asked himself this question. If the Hulk is madder than the Hulk has ever been, and his power levels are crazy high, if he should sneeze now, would he blow out an eyeball?
Dr. Josh.
No. I was about to say yes, and then I went, no. When he's indestructible.
Yeah. He can't hurt himself.
No. And actually,
that's a good question. Can an indestructible person hurt themselves?
No.
Well,
no?
They're indestructible.
Yeah. Well, just like you can't hurt yourself. Like, you couldn't sneeze and blow your own eyeball out. He's proportionally that strong.
Right. Well, no. Well, you could hurt yourself if you wanted to, but you won't hurt yourself doing things like sneezing because your body regulates that.
What about lifting something very heavy?
You might strain
with your back, not your knees.
Well, you might strain
yourself.
Banner, he projects his rage outwardly, not in your, or the Hulk projects his rage outwardly, not inwardly. Whereas Banner would hurt himself, but when he's the Hulk, it's somebody else's fault.
We've spent too much time on this.
Okay. No, but listen.
Josh from Portland, Maine. Wait a minute.
I'm not from Portland.
Josh, you can just talk to us. You don't need to send an email in.
Yeah. Just call
Josh,
me.
You
Josh,
guys won't call me back, so I start writing in letters to the contact at iFanboy address.
That's why. He writes and says, I recently discovered that the town I live in now is a great library system with tons and tons of graphic novels to pick from. It has allowed me to catch up on a ton of stuff I've had recommended by you and other fans like Runaways, Y, Fables, Invincible, DMZ, etc. However, simply borrowing all these trades to read them means my trade collection is pretty slim. I was wondering what it is about a trade that makes you guys want to buy it and have it as your own rather than simply borrow it from each other or browse through it at a local shop or library. Is it the bonus material, a presentation, like the Awesome Absolute Edition, simply being a favorite series of yours, or some other X factor? No pun intended.
That's a really good question.
That's a great question.
I was thinking about this sort of thing just the other day because I realized that if I don't love something or I like it but I don't love it and I've read it, I don't feel the need to buy it. So, for example, like I'll read books that you guys have or I'll borrow them. And
well, we should preface it by saying we do pass around books like crazy.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, insane. Yeah.
But, like, for example, I didn't buy DMZ, which I really, really liked, but I read Connors, so I didn't buy it for whatever reason. And I don't know, like, I don't really feel the need now to have the complete library just because I don't have enough space. But, like, I have all my Walking Dead and all my Invincible traits, and I want to have those because I love that story.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what it is that made me buy Y and not borrow it from you guys or whatever. You know, it's just the feeling you get. I mean, definitely there's an archival aspect of it where, like, there's absolutes and the omnibuses and stuff like that. Those are ones I want for, like, my permanent collection.
Well, what would it take for you to buy something that you already own in the issues? That's an absolute.
Yeah, that's the archival presentation or extra bonus material or oversized. If something's got – slap a hardcover and make it bigger than it was originally printed and I'm drooling. I mean that's a no-brainer.
It takes a lot for me to buy a trade of something that I already own.
Well, case in point, this week Alan Moore's run on Wildcats came out in trade paperback and I loved that run. I have it all in issues. I stood there in the store holding the trade and I said, I have the issues, and I put it back. You know, like, because the trade didn't wow me enough to make me want to get it.
I'm trying to think. I bought all of Alias in trade after I'd owned about half the issues. Probably a quarter.
Oh, now that's a good example. I have every issue of Alias, and I have the Alias omnibus.
Yeah.
Well, that was special.
Yeah, so.
I keep everything. I want to keep everything, and not just with comics. I've got books all up the wazoo. I watch a movie and see those old Victorian England libraries with the guys on a double ladder and swinging down the wall picking books out, and I want that.
Do you guys do what I want
books everywhere.
I actually do tend to think I'm like, I want to have these books everywhere, same deal, but because like someday I want to have like my kids will be like, wow, these books are great. No, probably just me.
No. Kids? Fuck them.
No, but like seriously, I do think that like someday if I have kids then I want – like, it's really cool to have this great library around that has all this other stuff that they can discover like I did.
Yeah, totally, totally. I mean, I'm not as worried as space as you are, Josh. I mean, you seem to be, you know, like that's a factor for you.
Well, no, what happens
is I'll always make the space for the books, and like I definitely.
What happens to me is that the collection gets to be scary to me, and every once in a while I go through a neurotic fit of I'll never be able to read all this again.
Well,
I'm weird.
I just want the books everywhere. I like the smell of books.
You like to just put them over your naked body and bathe in them.
He wants. He wants
it's
if there's a fire to die immediately.
It's like Uncle Scrooge in the vault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If there's a fire in either of your places, you're going down.
Going up. Anyway. All right. So thank you, Josh. That's a great question. Our next email comes from Michael, who wants to know if we think we'll ever get to an age where we decide to give up comics. Are there many 50 to 60 year olds buying comics? Would it be weird having kids telling other kids that their dad reads comics and collects toys? Would those other kids make fun of you? Is there some quantum jump in maturity where we have to tell ourselves I'm too old to read about Spider-Man? Will the story still be meaningful for us? That's a tie-in to the previous question.
These are long-reaching questions.
Yeah, these are soul-searching.
I think about this one a lot, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's entirely possible because I don't know
how to stop.
No, I think it's entirely possible that I will stop at some point, simply because I don't know if I'm going to be a 75-year-old man buying comics.
I don't think I'm ever going to stop because
– I need medicine.
Because I can't – I mean, I can't – I mean, I tried to stop. When I went to college, I'm like, all right, enough of this kid stuff, enough of the comics, blah, 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 and I lasted maybe 3 months. And the fact of the matter is that I really enjoy getting my books every Wednesday. I really enjoy the escapism of a couple hours of just reading those books. And I really, you know, Jesus, how, you know, 20 years invested in the X-Men, you know, like I'm not going to walk away from that's longer than I've known you guys.
Let me add a question to that. Yeah. How old is too old to be doing a podcast about comics?
That's a much better question, I think.
Yeah.
And I honestly, I think it's 31.
Countdown to our fanboy extinction begins now. 8 months and counting.
So what about you, Josh?
Shit, I don't know.
You're going to quit this year, I think.
No, I already
went
through
a time
my...
where I switched from, you know, superheroes just to indies and stopped going weekly, and I can see that definitely.
And then into trades and hardcovers and stuff like that.
If superheroes undergo a change where there's not adult writers writing for adults, then I will lose interest in them very fast. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, well, as long as the quality keeps up. Yeah, absolutely.
But the thing is, like, the people writing for superhero comics right now are writing for me. I mean, I am, for the most part. Those are the books that I really like.
This is Josh dedicated to Josh.
Well, no, but they're writing for my demographic. Like,
yeah,
adult, you know, men mostly. But, you know, people who are relatively intelligent and read and but you know what I mean? They're not written for 12-year-olds. And if they start writing comics for 12-year-olds again, then that I'll move out of superheroes real fast. Cool. So if you've got any emails and you want to send them in, we got a great batch of them this week. That was a lot of fun. contact@ifanboy.com.
All right, cool. So we got some voicemails this week. And our first voicemail is talking about that topic we can't stop talking about, conventions.
I want to.
Hey, guys. It's Kyle from Chicago, Deus Ex Kyle on the boards. Just gearing up for Wizard World Chicago this weekend, and I was just wondering if you guys had any pretty interesting con stories. I know my first year, I won't get into it in detail, but let's just say there was a former pro wrestler named Virgil who kind of screwed me out of $20, but maybe I'll post it on the boards or something like that. But yeah, I was just wondering if you guys had any funny stories or, you know, any first-time experiences or anything like that. But yeah, I thought it'd be pretty interesting to hear what you had to say. All right, later.
Ah, the con. Such good memories.
We tend to put a lot of our funny stories into the show, but
we do,
always,
but
some.
But actually, one of my favorite con moments that's actually happened years ago was at the first year we went to San Diego, like 2001, 2002. But when, you know, up in the up at San Diego in the sales pavilion in the little autograph area, when for some reason there's nobody there, and I just was able to walk right up to Frank Gorshin, who played the Joker on the original Batman.
No, series. The Riddler.
The Riddler. Fucking A, the Riddler. You're right.
Cesar Romero.
Yeah, with the mustache. Right, damn it. The Riddler, who he was also in one of my favorite Star Trek episodes too, and said hello, shook his hand, got a picture, and that was kind of one of my favorite kind of little moments, you know, little fan moments.
I felt like everybody's favorite moment was this year was briefly glimpsed in the show, which was when Gordon the intern and I decided to take a pedicab home.
Yes, that was.
Which, if you know Gordon the intern and I, and the other intern Patrick who couldn't make it, was that last year we really enjoyed the pedicab ride.
You guys love your pedicabs.
But just if you don't know and you haven't been there because they don't exist anywhere else, the pedicabs is all these people stood outside with basically like bicycle rickshaws, and they offer to ride people back to the hotel.
They're spreading, dude. They're popping up in every city.
Okay.
They're in New York. They're in San Francisco. They're in Chicago.
Everyone lives in these metropolitan areas.
I know. I'm just saying. I mean, it's not only San Diego. That's all. So. Yeah. But yeah, you're right.
So we took them a lot last year for various reasons I won't get into. But this year we didn't really take any. One day I was bringing the box of shirts back from the convention, and we just decided to say screw it. We took a cab, Gordon and I, and as you can see in the video, the girl driving the cab wasn't in shape, and she couldn't go very fast. And we were lapped by every pedicab that passed us, as well as Ron and Josh on the street.
I was holding the camera, and I kept running past you to shoot it. And then I was like, wait, I'm going to shoot some more. So I run past again.
Well, and eventually, about one block from the hotel, she just gave up.
Ironically, a lot of our
Just pulled to the curb and said, I'm done, and we just got out.
Ironically, a lot of our shared con memories or favorite con moments don't have anything to do with comics or creators or anything like that. It's weird shit like that. Or like when we ordered pizza and wings and stuff, and the woman came to deliver it, and she walked in the hotel room and looked around and looked at the food that we ordered, the amount of food, and said, I thought there'd be more of you. That was one of my favorite moments. Because we'd ordered like 8 pizzas and like 3 things for like 4 people.
I feel like I've wasted my best stories already. If you listen to the Around Comics that I was on, I told the hot tub / Rob Liefeld story.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So you'd have to go research that one. And then there was
If you look on the web, you can also probably find another person's account of our interactions with Eddie Campbell and his family.
The saga of Eddie Campbell. If you can't find it on the web, you should find us. If you ever get a chance to meet us, we'll tell you the story. We're not publishing it.
Yes, exactly.
And then the only other one, just relating to this one, I thought it was really funny, is that if you watched the Totally Rad show this last week, they taped us when we met those guys.
Yeah,
and we didn't know the camera was on. And that
no idea.
Exact moment, Ron and I were standing there. We were waiting for about 45 minutes at that point to interview somebody who was finishing up a signing, who will be in the next show, and we did not want to miss him. And then at that same point that Totally Rad Show came up, another guy came up to talk to Ron, and another guy came up to talk to me. And
it was like the perfect storm. It was amazing.
Right, and so you can see us on the video on the Totally Rad Show from last week. We're looking left and right and looking really distracted, like we don't want to talk to them, and it's because we just didn't want to lose everything that was happening.
It was a tense moment, that's for sure.
But so, it all worked out. We got the interview, and we still got to meet everyone.
Yeah, cons are a lot of fun. All right, cool. So our next voicemail comes from – actually, I'm surprised where it comes from.
Hey, guys. How's it going? This is Dave calling you from Montevideo, Uruguay. Just was thinking today as I was looking at your website and all the coverage you had of the San Diego stuff, I still haven't seen – who won the Eisners, and I'm kind of curious. I was hoping you guys would talk about it in last podcast, but nothing about it. Maybe you guys could say something about it in the next one. Thanks.
Oh, yeah, the Eisners.
Right, yeah, we kind of glossed over that.
Does anyone really talk about it?
They do.
I think the thing is we didn't go to the awards because it was on the same night as our party. And I think the thing with the Eisners this year was that the nominations were really interesting and really diverse, and the people who won were kind of predictable.
But deserved, in my opinion.
So we didn't really – we glossed kind of over it, but I got the list of winners here, and I'll just shout out a couple and we can react to it. Yep. Best single issue, Batman the Spirit number 1 by Jeff Loeb and Darwin Cook.
You guys –
Yeah, I love that issue.
Yeah.
People didn't like it as much as I did, but I thought it was really fun.
Apparently someone did.
Best new series, Criminal by Ed Baker and Sean Phillips.
You know we're down with that.
Yeah.
Best anthology, Fables, 1001 Nights of Snowfall.
That was really good.
Yep. that's all you can say. Like, best reality-based work, Fun Home by Alison Bechdel.
Yeah, no argument.
Yeah, best graphic album, American Born Chinese by Gene Yang.
No argument.
These are all things we love, so.
Yeah. Best graphic album reprint, Absolute DC The New Frontier by Darwin Cook. It's just like.
I've worn mine out from stroking it.
But I think
it's like people throwing us softballs.
I know. What I do think is interesting is that Alan Moore didn't win anything.
He wasn't nominated for anything.
Yeah, he was nominated for a lot of stuff. Nothing won.
Well, you know what?
He didn't really get nominated, actually.
He didn't get nominated as much, but what he did get nominated, he didn't win.
Yeah, but I mean, if you weren't into Lost Girls for whatever reason, I don't know. I don't think this was like a great year for him. It's not like he put a lot of work out.
I know. Fables took a lot. Ed Brubaker took a lot. He took Best Writer for whatchamaplot.
Best Writer.
For Captain America, wasn't it?
It's all of them.
Yeah, I see.
Dave Skinner, Best Colorist.
Yep. Todd Klein, Best Lettering, well-deserved.
Yep.
The best series was somewhat controversial for people. It was All-Star Superman.
Yep.
That was the only one that – I don't read it, though, so I don't know. But I have heard people who do read it absolutely love it, so I can't fault that. The only thing that really should have happened that didn't, I think, Cup Noodle.
Yeah, Cup Noodle got screwed.
Yeah, but they lost American Born Chinese, so.
Yeah, but still, I don't know. Anyway, so the Eisners are interesting. If you go to Google, just type in 2001 Eisner Award winner. 2007 Eisner Award winner.
2001?
You can find it.
That one. That was boring.
The Authority.
Warren Ellis.
Box office poison.
So anyway, the Eisners are interesting. So if you have a question about the Eisners or about conventions or anything, you can send us a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697.
But we want to thank youbuynow.com for being our sponsor. They're the spot on the web for toys, action figures, collectibles, prop replicas, stuff like that. They have DC Direct stuff and Marvel Legends stuff and Master Replicas and Star Wars figures and all that stuff. So if you've got a Jones for that kind of thing – and there's a lot of toys out there that we saw in San Diego.
Some good stuff on the way, yep.
Man, there's those people at DC are just tempting you left and right. You should go to youbynow.com, which is Y-O-U buynow.com.
You buy now.
Ron!
Yes.
You're an animal.
Why?
Where are you going?
By the time you listen to this, folks, in the interweb, I will have returned from Chicago, from Wizard World Chicago. Shock and horror.
Animal.
Gordon, the intern, and I will be hitting Chicago. Will have hit Chicago by the time you heard this, and we will have absorbed what is supposed to be a very good convention in Wizard World Chicago. I'm a little spectacle. Skeptical.
You're a tiny eyeglass?
I'm a little spectacle.
Short and stout.
I'm a little skeptical, but we'll see.
Data from Goonies today.
I totally am.
We get to go hang out with the Around Comics guys.
We're gonna see the Around Comics guys. We're gonna hang out with John Suntress. Some other creators that we're friends with are gonna be there.
Mike Norton said that if he saw you, he would punch you in the neck.
Awesome, fantastic.
Yes, there's that.
Can't wait. Matt Sillity from who did the Homeless Channel is going to be there. He's going to be out from San Francisco, so it's going to be cool to hang out with him. It should be interesting. Hopefully I've had a good time. If you go to ifanboy.com, you will probably be able to see pictures and read me and Gordon's experiences there. And if you tune into ifanboy.com in the next couple of weeks, you might see a video of it.
Now, you lost your voice at New York. I lost my voice in San Diego.
So Connor's going to mysteriously lose his voice while I'm in Chicago.
That would be awesome.
What happened? I don't understand. I slept for 12 hours.
We actually lost an entire intern. At Heroes.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Completely. So we'll have been at Chicago. So if you were at Chicago, hopefully you saw us. And we think this is probably –
Hopefully we had fun and it was all nice.
Sure, we had a good time. And this is at least the last convention in the summer we'll be attending and probably the last one of the year. So if you didn't get us, catch us next year. Righto. But in the meantime, go to ifanboy.com where you can see our what we thought of Chicago, Wizard World Chicago, as well as the San Diego Comic Con and all our other conventions. Great conversation. Read the pick of the week. Read my Powers review. Read what other people thought. And it's a good time.
Read some blogging that's been going on.
Yes.
Hey, you got a torso. That torso needs cloth.
Yeah, it's true.
You got cloth.
Yep.
Inks.com/ifanboy. Ifanboy t-shirts. They're awesome.
Wow, I was completely lost on that. What does the Bendis book have to do with anything?
We're very excited as well as some of the ifanboy faithful to get the ifanboy t-shirts from Jinx. If you go to ifanboy.com and click up in the upper right-hand corner, there's a link to t-shirts. Or you can go to jinx.com/ifanboy and get your t-shirt. They're sexy.
Also, if you have got a t-shirt, take a picture, send it in. We're going to compile them and we're going to put them all up somewhere.
Yeah, and you could also submit them to Jinx and they'll put them up on their site, hypothetically.
Send them to us, too.
Yeah. So, and if you want to send them to us, you can send them at contact@ifanboy.com. And like we said, you can leave a voicemail 1-888-FANBOY is 1-888-326-2697.
You should watch the video show in addition to listening to this show. Last week we brought out our first part of our big San Diego show, and when I say big, it was big. And we have another part equally as large coming out this Wednesday with just as many names in it and more fun stuff.
You know what I love about the con, which I didn't mention in the con stories thing, was. And we walk around the con like, God, we didn't shoot anything this time. And then we have two shows worth of stuff.
That's ridiculous.
We have a feature-length documentary worth of stuff.
We really do, actually.
Yeah.
And if you missed it this past week, if you go back last Wednesday, the first part of our San Diego special came out, and it had Jim Lee and Bill Willingham and Adam Beechin and other people.
Jeffrey Brown.
And other people. So go check that out. And then part two coming out on Wednesday. So go to revision3.com/ifanboy or look it on ifanboy at around 3 o'clock Eastern time.
Have you heard from Robert yet, Downey?
I'd rather not comment on the podcast.
Okay, sorry. I shouldn't have brought that up. Stupid.
Go to frack.com/ifanbay.
Ifanbay.
I'm going to go to ifanbay.com right now.
Ifanboy. Tell us where you're from. Put a pin in the map. Represent yourself amongst the legion of ifanboy fans. Ifanboy.com. It's got a little link in the top right-hand corner. ifanboy.com.
And real quickly, on frapper.com/ifanboy, we've had some recent frapper folks like Jonathan C. Rose Esquire from Swindon, England.
Nice.
Cheers, mate.
Or Zen Bullets from Brighton, England.
Cheers, mate.
Really?
DJ Evil One, who says, Josh is a pompous BBQ snob.
He's not wrong.
And he's from Tokyo, Japan, DJ Evil One. Mike Graham 6 from Ottawa, Canada, who says, what's up?
Hey, finally.
Yeah, finally, Mike. Patrick from Greenville, North Carolina, who loves the podcast. And Blake from Astoria, who says, Astoria!
Word! Where you at?
And Dash from Boulder, Colorado, who wrote in last week, who says, my girlfriend kind of likes comics. Woohoo! So go to frapper.com and check out all the recent art. Joe from Fargo, North Dakota, who says Stan Lee is a Skrull.
He's not. He's a Doombot. Everybody knows that.
Yes, exactly. Jesus. So go to frapper.com/iFanboy, where you can join Jeffrey from Overland Park, Kansas, in his opinion that this is the best show ever.
We would like to agree with you, Jeffrey.
Social networks, myspace.com/iFanboy, comicspace.com/iFanboy, verb.com/iFanboy. That's it. Twitter.com/iFanboy. You can track our movements. Ron, will you be Twittering?
Gordon and I will have been Twittered in Chicago, so you can go back and read what we Twittered in Chicago, and we will continue to Twitter throughout the non-convention season. So,
depending on how late you're Twittering.
Yeah. Also, you can go to Facebook.com, and there's an iFanboy group you can join, and you can find us on Facebook and be our friend, and you can find your way to the group that way as well.
So if you like the show, you can help out in all sorts of ways. You can go to PodcastAlley.com and vote, or you can write a review in iTunes for either the video show or the audio show or both. That would be wonderful. Even better than that, you can go and tell all of your friends or anybody you think who might like the show, or you know, just help spread the word and get people who might like it who don't know about it. Because podcasting is still new.
Yes, it is.
So you could do that. Or you could dig the show at dig.com. That would also be good.
Yeah, in the podcast section. And finally, if you like what we're doing and you enjoy the show and you want to give back a little, you can go to ifanboy.com/donations, where you can use PayPal to make a donation. We got a couple of different denominations there. You can choose your own denomination. We've had a couple of very generous people this past week, and so we want to thank everybody who's donated, and you kind of help the show. You keep us going, so we really appreciate that. I got to go pack for Chicago, even though
you
when
haven't
you hear
packed?
I'll be unpacking from Chicago. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Josh.
I'm Connor.
He didn't hang up.
Very slow. We're not good at this.
Not good at all.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.